Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am Kate Romero, your host for Spiritual Hollywood, and I'd like to thank Mr. Don Newsome and Seth over there at BBS Radio for giving us this wonderful platform to make a difference by raising consciousness through media with Spiritual Hollywood. I have a wonderfully appropriate guest this evening for Spiritual Hollywood. His name is Michael Wallach. He is a personal talent manager and a member of the Talent Managers Association, as am I. And we belong to the same organization. And he's written a wonderful book on for actors, a very simple book that is such a delightful read. It's called How to Get Arrested. And if you want to go to his website, it's www.howtogetarrested.com. That's www.howtogetarrested.com. And Michael was just telling me before we went on the air that he's not making a profit on this book. He's giving it all to charity, actors' charities, to help actors get themselves started and have the things that they need. So I think that's a marvelous, altruistic, benevolent reason to have written this book. So I'm going to read to you a bit of Michael's bio so you'll know who it is we're about to speak to. So go ahead and sign on to his website, www.howtogetarrested.com, and you'll see a lot of things there, including Michael's picture. He's very handsome. And also a picture of the book, How to Get Arrested, which is very clever. The book cover is very clever. Here it is. Here's Michael's bio. Michael has been a personal manager guiding the careers of actors and other industry professionals for more than 20 years. He created and teaches a popular 6-week course entitled This Business of Acting and a seminar for talent representatives for UCLA Extension several times each year. Recently, he wrote the motivational and informative book for actors, How to Get Arrested. And that's a motivational story for actors breaking into Hollywood. And Michael Wallach is an attorney, admitted to the New York Bar, and began his career with a short stint in the Queens District Attorney's Office. He quickly shifted to entertainment, working at first in business affairs for RCA Records in New York. Michael then moved to Los Angeles, where he became a business affairs executive at Columbia Pictures Television. Additionally, Wallach has been active in increasing the visibility and regard for personal managers as an important part of the Hollywood process, and served 2 terms as Vice President of the Conference of Personal Managers, which is Talent Managers Association today. Wallach frequently lectures at colleges and acting schools in the Los Angeles area, emphasizing his belief that actors can make it in Hollywood with talent as well as focus and knowledge of the business. Even if they arrive in town without knowing a soul, How to Get Arrested, a motivational story for actors breaking into Hollywood by Michael J. Wallach is a unique book that teaches valuable lessons to actors, which includes the new chapter, Myths Demystified, the 5 myths that will hold you back from success. Michael Wallach, a personal manager and attorney for more than 20 years, shares his knowledge and advice in a stylish, non-academic manner. No dry checklist in this book, easily readable and lots of fun. Find out why you don't have to know anyone to make it in this business. And without further ado, I'd like to bring on Michael J. Wallach. Hello, Michael.
Hi there, Katie.
Hey,
how you doing?
Thanks for joining us. This is great.
Appreciate that nice introduction.
Yeah. Well, thanks to you. It's your bio.
And, oh, I appreciate it.
And I just want to tell the listeners right now that I have enjoyed reading this book so much.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you can read it in an afternoon, and it is delightful. And
I think
you
can read it in an hour.
Yeah, you certainly can if you got an hour straight, solid.
Right,
I could too if I had all that much time at one time.
That's true.
But the thing is that being a talent manager myself, Michael, for gosh, 25 years I've been doing this.
Uh-huh.
I actually learned some things by reading your book as well.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, so I think every agent should read this book. I think every talent manager should read this book. I think that every actor should read this book. And like I said, it's not a big, long commitment to read it, and you get so much out of it. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for writing it. So people can find your book on www.howtogetarrested.com. There will be instructions there on where they can get it.
Yes. Right now it's selling, of course, online, but it is selling as a pre-order because, or advance copy, because it's officially being released September 15th by this national distributor. And it's in some of the stores in town in L.A., such as Samuel French and Book Soup and Skylight Books. But I realized that it's online. The book sells for $11.95. But right now I saw just today that on Amazon they sell it for $9 and change because it's an advanced copy.
Great.
So it's very inexpensive.
Yes, it is, and it's well worth every penny of that. I'm surprised it's so inexpensive. I know there are other books out there that are about the same amount of pages as your book that sell for twice that much and have a lot less information that you can use.
Yeah, it's a different type of book, if I have a second to say something about it.
Take all the time
you
need.
I'm sure you also were aware of so many books out there, and there must be seriously 100 actor books. Some of them are, I hate to use this word, but because it's such an off-used word, it's brilliant. They're great books. There's a great resource book by, let's see, Judy Kirk called Acting is Everything.
Yes.
Tremendous book. There are great books about the Meisner method and, you know, how to act and how to put on makeup and all. There's one thing that separates all of those books from mine,
mm-hmm.
which is they're basically textbooks.
Right.
And they're well written. And I decided to write a story as a novella or novel where we watch two actors, Dick and Jane, move from New York.
Mm-hmm.
And where they have some success, they all later pursue their dreams. And I teach lessons, so to speak, through the actions of the characters. And one does it the right way and one does it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's a novel. It's just a story where they're talking to each other. You know, it's point, counterpoint. Dick says this and Jane says this and then Dick says this. And you can tell right off who's on the right track and who's on the wrong track. Who's on the way to success and who's not.
Right.
And there are good reasons for that. And I really think it'll help any new actor and also any veteran actor that wants to remember the basics and get motivated again. Get off there, you know what, and just do what they have to do in order to make it if they haven't already.
Right. And I'm sure that you've had this experience where you've had clients like Dick and you've had clients like Jane.
Yes, I have.
Yes. And
yes, I have.
Tell me, you don't have to mention names, of course, but do you have just a fun story to tell our listeners about the Dick character that you had in real life and the Jane character you had in real life?
Well, let me think.
Your favorite ones?
I can tell you stuff from the book. I can't think of specific stories. I wish you asked me that a little bit before the show. I would really try to find some great anecdotes.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, we've got Dick who wants to get discovered. If I can read a little something from the book.
Sure, if you'd like to.
Okay. Let me see if I can find it. And people can get the idea right off the bat.
Right.
And yes, I've seen many actors like this.
Mm-hmm.
I've got here.
And you know
funny.
What the biggest pleasure for me as a talent manager is the actors who are like Jane. The actors who are like...
I totally agree.
Yes. If the actors who are like Dick, who have a lot of potential and they're good human beings, I will invest the time as long as they're coachable. One of my pet peeves, my all-time pet peeve,
right.
is to get somebody who is not coachable, who just wants to do it their way and they won't let me guide them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But if somebody is coachable and they'll listen to reason and they'll do what you suggest, then I'll never give up on them.
Well, I feel the same. I mean, I feel very loyal to a client that really tries.
Absolutely.
So,
they need to make mistakes along the way so they can
lessen. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
But here's the crux of Dick. I've got here on page 4.
Okay.
It's a short paragraph.
I will follow along.
Excuse me?
I will follow along.
Okay, back to our heroes. Dick and Jane's excitement builds knowing they're an hour away from New York and that much closer to Hollywood as they're in the plane. Dick daydreams of being discovered when he strolls through the airport terminal.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he thinks that before he even arrives, walking down the aisle to the men's lavatory could get him discovered by a producer flying to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Jane, on the other hand, looks over a list of L.A. agents. She hopes that she gets represented by one who keeps her working regularly. So right off, I mean, the book gets serious in parts, but right off we know how Dick is thinking and how Jane is thinking.
Right, right. And I found it particularly refreshing because I was an actress for 15 years, a single mom and an actress, so I didn't have the luxury to be afraid to do anything, and I really had to pay attention. And I made lots of mistakes, which makes me a very good talent manager today. But the part about Dick putting Jane down basically for going with a small boutique agency and thinking she should sign with one of the giant agencies first and not waste her time. Or when Dick tells Jane when she has an audition, it's like, well, unless the director's going to be in the room, don't waste your time. Tell them you
have
to go to see directors. You won't go to first calls.
Exactly.
And, you know, and that sort of entitlement mentality is death for an actor.
Yeah, I think what an actor has to do is, well, first and foremost, and I mean this so sincerely, you've got to be great. You've got to know how to pick up a piece of material and do something with those words.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have that, then it's a matter of just going out and doing things and not worrying about what is the conventional wisdom, you know, that I should do it this way or that way, or I have to know somebody in order to make it. You know, why aren't I related to Alec Baldwin or Michael Douglas or somebody like that?
Mm-hmm.
This business is all about pushing and perseverance and being a good actor. And everybody, I'd say 95% of the actors, when they came to town, they knew nobody.
Right.
You know, I saw a breakdown the other day, which would be a perfect example of what I'm saying. In terms of somebody, an actor is out there, he or she knows nobody at all, and they go through the channels. They have an agent, maybe they have a manager, and they go up for one line here and one line there, and then they start getting those things, and then they get an episodic, and then they're co-starring in it, and then they get a guest starring role in an episodic, and so on. And then pilot season rolls around, and they get a pilot. And in pilots, except for usually one person of, say, the six, everybody's virtually new and unknown. So they get a pilot, the pilot sells, they have a series, all of a sudden they're somebody. And everybody is coming to them saying, how did you do it? Who did you know to make it happen?
Right.
But they didn't know anybody. They just worked at it, and they went from A to B to C to D.
Mm-hmm.
And just as an example, because I just saw this breakdown the other day, there's a new NBC series. It's a one-hour dramatic called Journeyman.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Ulrich Dawson Kritzer.
Right, exactly. Okay. Very good. And I'm reading, or I'm looking at the series regulars. Let me read the six series regulars, okay?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, the first one is Kevin McKidd. The second one is Gretchen Egolf. Now remember, this is a one-hour sold NBC series, prime time, make everybody a star if it hits. Third person is Reed Diamond. Then there's a Charles Henry Wyson, a Moon Bloodgood, and a Brian Howe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know of Kevin McKidd because I remember he was a series regular on the HBO series Rome. But except for him, and he wasn't, that wasn't a big series, of course, and he's not well known. But except for him, the rest of the five people, they got arrested, so to speak, by starting with episodics. And they did it, and their careers, for the most part, filled up with episodics. Pilot season rolled around, they went up for a pilot, they got it, and all of a sudden, the pilot sold and is a series. So he is a perfect example. Of all the six people, really nobody is known.
Right.
It's not like Ben Stiller is the lead or something like that.
Right.
So they did it. How did they do it? They didn't necessarily know anybody.
Nope. One foot in front of the other. Common sense.
That's the way it works. That's the way it works with all actors in this town. In fact, so many actors I've heard say, well, you know, oh, well, they're so lucky. You know, Charlie Sheen, he's related to Martin Sheen, or, you know, the Baldwins, and the Michael Douglas related to Kirk Douglas. And then, Besides that, only a few percentage of all actors are related or know somebody. If you think about it, the Baldwin family, how did that get started? Alec Baldwin was in New York. He was modeling. He was doing a soap opera. And then he came out to L.A. I remember he did Knots Landing, and from there he just kept working. But he started it. He didn't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
He was a model in New York. He was doing a soap opera in New York. That's the way it started, and now they've become a successful clan.
Yes, but they have.
Right, but they didn't know anybody when they started, so everybody can do it, is what I'm saying.
Yes, and the Arquette family, you name it, anybody out there.
Exactly, the Arquette family.
Yeah, somebody started somewhere.
Yeah.
And I believe in this too, Michael, is there are no small parts, only small actors. And any time an actor says no, they're saying no to the improvisation. And when you say no in the improvisation stops. And life is like that.
That's so true. That's so true. You've just got to keep progressing. You
mm-hmm.
don't know what's going to be around the next corner. You really don't know anything. You don't know if you're in a coffee shop that's filled with actors and sometimes casting directors, if that's going to mean something. You don't know if you go up for an audition, you know there's no way you're going to get it because it's your first or second time and they tell you you're not going to get it. But why do you do it? Because you know you meet the casting director. If they like you, not only do they possibly give you another part, but they tell your agent or your manager, hey, he's really good. Remind me about that person. I want to bring that person back.
Absolutely.
And that's the way it works.
Yes,
it's difficult, but it's that simple.
Yep. So do you think that actors should be reading the Daily Variety or the Hollywood Reporter?
No.
Tell us why.
Okay. In fact, I am very strong against an actor reading the Daily Variety or the Reporter for this reason, that the Reporter and Variety are really good if you're in the industry, if you're behind the scenes, so you know that some movie grossed something on a particular weekend and it was the highest grossing film that summer, or you know that a particular producer just got a deal with 20th Century Fox to do 5 shows. But when it comes to the actor, if anything, besides that you'll be teased by that, it's not going to get you a job.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a casting director can check that out and see who's going to be producing a new series and approach them for a job. But an actor reading the trades is invaluable because there's information there that's not going to help you as an actor. If anything, it's going to make you crazy thinking that, oh, Owen Wilson has just made $10 million in his last movie. I mean, that's the type of stuff you'll read.
Right.
And you will get unrealistic about the business and how an Owen Wilson started. So reading the trades, it's for other people. It's
right.
A waste, unless you can read it for fun. It's the same thing I feel about Hollywood parties. If you go to a Hollywood party, don't go there to get a job.
Uh-huh.
Go there to have fun.
Yes.
And if you have fun and you don't have an agenda, people like you more. When people like you more, they tend to cast you in things.
Yeah.
They tend to remember you. But if you go there to get a job, that's when it doesn't work.
Yeah, people might not remember what you say, but they will remember how you made them feel. And if you're
exactly.
being desperate and pressuring somebody, they won't forget that feeling.
Exactly, Katie.
Yeah.
And some people, and I've seen it so many times, they'll go to a party, and it's supposedly an industry party, or it is an industry party, and the actor will go up to somebody and say, for example, well, I'm an actor, you know, and do it in a nice way. I'm an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably, the person they're talking to, this producer or somebody like that, is going to say, when you say, I'm an actor, they're going to say, oh, what have you been doing?
Mm-hmm.
What have you done?
Mm-hmm.
And that actor who's brand new is going to be just fumbling for words. Well, I was up on soap opera yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if you're at a party like that, go there, be friendly with these people, let them say to you, I bet you're an actor. What, you haven't done anything yet, I suppose. You know, I like you. Or they'll be thinking to themselves, I like this person. This person really is right for my next project.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it's going to happen when you don't put yourself out there, when you don't have anything to back yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just go to a party and have fun and see what results. That's the way things are going to result. Otherwise, you're just going to end up with 1,400 business cards.
Yes. And,
usually if it's, well, a girl or a guy these days, I mean, it's going to be, you're going to get a business card for social reasons, not because somebody really has a project for you.
Right, right. And when a person is comfortable in their own skin and they have a solid sense of self, they get
right.
my attention a lot more than if they're jumping around in front of me trying to get my attention when they're not even ready for a manager yet.
Exactly.
I was at a car wash last Saturday.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, you'll love this.
Right.
I'm sitting there reading your book.
Oh.
This guy comes up to me, and he goes, are you in the business? And I said, who wants to know? He goes, I do. I said, why do you want to know? He goes, are you in the business? And I said, I might be. He goes, well, are you or not? And I said, well, you know, that's kind of rude. I'm just sitting here minding my own business. Why do you want to know? He goes, well, you look like an actress. You're a very beautiful woman. And I said, well, thank you. That's very kind of you. What is it that I can do for you? He says, well, what do you do? He said, are you an actress? And I said, no, I used to be. He goes, oh, are you in the business? I said, yes, I'm in the business. I thought I'd play along.
Right.
And he said, okay, are you a producer? I said, no. He goes, what do you do? I said, I'm a talent agent. Actually, I'm a manager, but I didn't tell him that because
right, okay.
What's the point?
Uh-huh.
So he said, oh, my God, I knew it. Stay where you are. I'll be right back. So he runs out to his car, which was being washed, makes them stop what they're doing, gets his stuff out of the car, brings it in and shows me. It's a picture of him looking goofy with no resume. He's going, I want you please to represent me. I know that I can make a movie called Texas Hold'em, and I know I can star in it, and I want you to help me, and you're the one who's supposed to help me because you were at the car wash when I was. And I'm telling you, and I had just lost my Versateller card in the Versateller machine. I had just watched the eclipse the night before, and I was so tired. I had a premonition when I pulled up to the bank that that was going to happen, and I laughed at myself going, I'm not going to do that. Well, I did that. So as soon as I realized, as I was trying to pay for my car wash, that my credit card was gone, I was trying to be on the phone to tell them to cancel it. So he's talking to me over my phone call.
Right.
Of trying to cancel my credit card, and I looked at him finally, and I said, you're being so incredibly rude. You're making every single thing about why I'm here about you. When I've lost my credit card, you don't even care about that. You're talking over me. I can't even make this call. I can't make this conversation. I'm a little panicked because my credit card is out there somewhere, not with me. And I need for you to understand that you are being very, very rude. He goes, I'm being rude? You're being rude. You're supposed to look at my picture. And I said, you know, I think that you should go now. I think your car's ready. And he just grabbed his stuff and huffed away. And, I mean, what did he accomplish from that?
Right, and how possible it is that for you to like him and maybe help him if he was helping you. Because
yeah.
You were in a situation, you were in jeopardy, you
mm-hmm.
possibly lost your card and had problems. He should have been helpful to you.
Absolutely.
And gotten himself off his self
mm-hmm.
and just realized what's out. I mean, they say, I have no idea how to act or to teach acting, but I've heard so many times people say, be in the moment.
Yes.
That's certainly something he was not in.
Yes.
If he was in the moment, he would have realized you're the one who was in trouble.
Yes.
Let me help out this girl. And then, who knows, you might take a liking to him or say, you know, come into the office, you know, give me a call, you'll come in and let me see if I can be helpful.
Yeah, or at least help him put together a resume or something.
Exactly. Not necessarily to represent the person, but to give the person another step up.
Yeah, I always offer somebody.
Yeah, that's a great story you have.
But it's funny that reading your book attracted him, and here we are talking about it, and it is a great story, and it happened, and it did leave me feeling so, I felt so deflated. I felt sorry for him. I felt like, gosh, I don't know how I could have handled that any better, and I found myself questioning myself about was I rude to him? Should I have given him my time? And I'm like, heck no, I shouldn't have. He should have been concerned about me.
Exactly.
So, you know, but it didn't need to happen, but after it did, I just shook my head because everything happens for a reason to serve us somehow, some way. And, you know, that'll end up a story in my book. I'm actually writing an actor's book, but I just love yours. Yours inspired me so much.
Well, I like that you're writing one, and you've got the background to really write a good one. And mine?
Yours is really good, though, too, Michael. I have to tell you, having been an actress, having been an agent, I was an agent with Herb Tannen for a time for a theatrical department, and being a manager, I got a lot out of your book. I probably always will. You know, there are things in there that I read that if I'd known these things when I was an actress, it would have saved me so much trouble.
You know, I just love you for saying that because I have heard that from so many people who said, if I only knew this,
I wouldn't have
wasted 10 years.
Yeah, I didn't sign with the small agent who was excited about me. Instead, I went and knocked on the bigger agent's door until my knuckles bled, till they finally said, okay, come in. You know, and I basically used them for an answering service and did the work myself. And every time I got myself a job, I sent them flowers so that they would really think they did that for me and maybe start doing that for me. But it didn't work out that way. That's how I knew.
It never works out that way. The big agents, and sometimes they're important for you or there's a reason to go there. But for the most part, they're all about volume and just picking up the phone.
Yes.
And you know, they pride themselves in being great deal makers when, in fact, they'll make a deal that won't be as great as a smaller agent who is, you know, a wise smaller agent. They certainly won't be there with you after you get the job. The only time you're going to really get their attention is if, say, the production company is not paying on time.
Right.
Then they'll make a phone call.
Yeah.
Then they'll make sure you're okay. But otherwise, they're going to just hope, oh, the series is going to do well, we'll renegotiate. And their thing is get as many people, say, that are on a series as possible, whether it's the production designer, an actor, a producer, a director, an associate producer, because the more people they have, the more elements they have of a show, the more likely, if there's an opening for, say, another actor, they're going to have power in that area. So they're just going to sign people, and they're not going to really, in general, I want to generalize, in general, they're not going to pay attention to that person. They're just sort of, in a way, they're going to lock them up.
Yes.
They're going to tie them to a contract, and the person will always be, for one day, they'll say, well, I'm with William Morris, and then they'll realize it's, that's not what it's about. If you're with William Morris, fine, if it's working for you, but for the most part, you'll get with a large agency and you'll feel, not that you'll feel more important. I mean, you may not be an egotistical person, but you'll feel as though, oh, I'm set.
It's like wearing a designer label. Is that going to pay your bills?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly
not really. I've had people come to me who had William Morris on the resume and then later found out it was for voiceover representation or hip pocket or something, and I'll say, well, when was the last time you heard from them?
Yeah,
boy, they must be calling you all the time. They're like, I haven't heard from them in 2 years. Why do you think I need a manager?
Exactly.
And like, okay, well, I guess they're an okay answering service, but, you know, will they even call if it's an audition for anything less than a lead or a series regular? Will they even call you and let you know somebody's looking for you?
That's so true. And very often, and I know a lot of the agents at those places, and I've seen it for the last 20 years, they themselves as agents are looking to climb the ladder. So they're not as concerned as they should be with a particular actor that they signed. They're thinking, well, now I want to be the head of the department. I want to be I want to be a partner in the agency.
Right.
So they're really thinking they're in a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to climb that ladder. So just like an actor wants something more, the agent also wants something more within their company.
And it doesn't have a lot to do with you unless you're Sirius Bank.
Exactly, and sometimes there's what's known as a signing agent, and I've gone through it with a client who I lost after a long time, and she wined and dined this client.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, besides the flowers and being on this, he got a big movie, and he was the first lead in a big Castle Rock movie. Every time I went to the set, which wasn't every day, as a manager, I mean, I talked to him on the phone every day,
mm-hmm.
but whenever I was on the set, say every week, say once a week,
mm-hmm.
she was always there.
Hmm.
So if she was always there every time I was there, that means she was there approximately every day, or somebody from the agency was there telling him how great he was. And one thing they did, I will never forget, they sent him every script that was out there, whether or not the script was right for him as an actor. They just wanted to show, oh, they were on top of everything. They ended up signing him, and that was the end of his career.
Yeah.
I don't want to say the name, but
no.
But he had a big series, and then he got a big movie, and they wanted him, and they got him. And they made him leave his, well, they told him to leave his agent. I did not want him to leave the agent because the agent, I'll tell you this. It was in the 90s and the agent was doing their job. Besides that, they took him with me from day one
mm-hmm.
to having a series to making over $800,000 that year.
Right.
They were doing their job. The guy got the Castle Rock movie, but during that time, or right after that, he was up for such things as Brad Pitt's part in Thelma and Louise. He could have gotten it.
Yeah.
You know, he was up for those major parts from this small, I guess you could say, boutique agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget what he said to me after he went in for this Brad Pitt part. I had read the script, and he called me up, and he said something to the effect he didn't do well. And I said, yeah, well, tell me about, you know, what happened, what you do. And then he said, I didn't realize it was a sexy role. Like, I had to be really seductive. I said, Brian, well, I won't mention names, but I said to him, I said, come on. If you read the script and didn't have your mind on the agency and how easy it was to get something because you were represented by a big agency, you would have realized that this character takes the bed of totally pristine wife who is loyal to her husband, and you know, you have to be so seductive and so charming and whatever. With this small agency, he was up for some major, major parts, but he left them anyway. But
yeah.
By at that time, the other agency already had his ear. That's what I was trying
yeah.
to say.
Yeah,
actually.
And they fed his ego by sending him all those scripts and made him feel very important.
Right.
Really made him feel like this is the way it's going to be from now on. They're going to treat him
exactly.
this way all the time.
And he almost felt as though when he got a script from his first agent, and I'm talking about Thelma and Louise, it wasn't as valuable anymore. It wasn't worth really researching and working on to get
mm-hmm.
the part. And he missed the Brad Pitt role. He could have been Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
You know, and he could have
yeah.
been a lot of things. And that's what happens when you think the big agency is just going to make me somebody. You go with a small agency, somebody who loves you to death, who you feel that way, and you just...
And you got a future with.
And you're not afraid, and you just don't be afraid of doing anything because nothing can hurt you.
Absolutely. And look at Jack Nicholson. I think he's just got a manager, right?
Well...
He doesn't have a big agency, as far as I know.
Well, as I know Jack Nicholson, I remember when he was at the Artist Agency, which is not around anymore as of a few months ago, but he was with Sandy Breslow, was his key agent. And Sandy Breslow left the Artist Agency, and he left with Sandy Breslow, somebody who loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to this day he's still with the agent, this one particular agent.
Mm-hmm.
The loyalty paid off.
Yes, loyalty.
And everybody obviously wanted Jack Nicholson.
Absolutely they did. But listen, look at this. I mean, I do totally believe that if a person will stay with somebody who loves them and is rooting for them and really gets them, they will get as farther along than they would ever get by jumping ship to somebody bigger because they're being romanced and wined and dined. I believe
and I have really seen it so many times.
Yeah, their chances are much, much greater. So when I take on a new client, I'm looking for loyalty as well as humanity, and I'm looking for talent as well. But, I mean, I really look for a loyalty where that person's head is on straight and they understand that the wind beneath their wings is the person that got them to that place where the big guys want them.
Right, and when somebody is like that, when an actor is like that, a good manager... will recognize that and will fight that much harder for the person.
Yes, yes.
You know?
But if you feel like they've got one foot out the door, I mean, that's heartbreaking. when you know somebody's just wait, you know, you've got a great relationship, things are going great, and then all of a sudden they say that one thing to you that makes you know that they're just about gone already with that next role.
That's right. And unless it works with the bigger agency, and usually it doesn't,
yeah,
they invariably, what happens is about a year to 2 years later, after they go through one big agency to the next, none of which help him or her, they invariably go knock on the door of their first agent or manager who really got them going, and they basically beg to come back. I've had that a number of times.
Yeah, I have as well. I have as well.
But
the lack of loyalty that sent them packing in the first place is something that I really look at when they come knocking again.
Yeah.
Because if they did it once, they'll do it again unless they've had a huge life transformation. And,
that's exactly
you know, you
right.
just don't know. But the book I'm writing is called The End of the Anonymous Actor, Changing Your Life Story Forever.
Ah.
And it's a book, it's basically a journey to the self. And when you really get a solid sense of self, then your loyalty kicks in. Then you understand that, you know, the person who's helping you along the way that get you to that place where you see yourself being and gives you the encouragement and guides you and coaches you to that place, then you know that that's the person that got you there, and the loyalty will help you stay there,
right,
and you will grow. And there's nothing I wanted more than to find the right agent and manager for myself when I was acting so that I could help their company grow, so that I could put them on the map.
Yeah, and you know, when that actor has a sense of self, it's not only important to the manager, but a sense of self ends up meaning more confidence, and more confidence without being arrogant shows in an audition, shows when you talk to people. They feel so good about you because you're comfortable in yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you end up getting the role.
Absolutely.
You
and
end
people...
up doing greater interviews when publicity comes up, dealing with the producer on the set,
yes,
dealing with other actors. It just works hand in hand. And in my book, I mean, I do talk about some tricks, some actual tricks to get yourself in gear if you don't. I mean, how many people begin their life with tremendous confidence,
yeah,
or don't have it? And it's not. And sometimes there are some tricks you can use, and that's what I talk about in the book. All kinds of things, from the
act confident.
Yeah, that's right.
It's
fake
acting.
It till you fake it till you make it.
Absolutely. And when you put
and
your hand on that doorknob, you're acting. It's showtime. When your hands on that doorknob, walking in the casting office. Actually, when you get out of your car in the parking lot, it's showtime. Because there are cameras.
You never know. I always, you know, I guess you mentioned I teach a class at UCLA,
yes,
extension called The Business of Acting that,
mm-hmm,
I created for them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a student will say, you know, Michael, you say the same thing all the time. You always say, you never know. You never know. And my other thing that I do say, that I write on the blackboard, every single class, it's more important than my name, it's more important than the name of the course. And I write on the blackboard in the upper left-hand corner in big letters, there are no rules.
Yes.
Everybody who has made it, well, let's say almost 100% of the people that are successful working actors started out in a different way. They did one line on this, they did a TV commercial, they were a stagehand, they were in a mailroom, whatever it is.
Right.
However, people just start. There's nobody you can talk to who's a successful actor and find two people giving the same story of how they started.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question, Michael.
Uh-huh.
I had a client who's now a series regular on a very, very big hot show.
Right.
I represented him, and I placed him with an agent. And we started noticing some weird things about this person.
Right.
And I found out later, I got a few phone calls from people doing some checking up on him. And he had been writing letters of recommendation for himself, signing my name, signing the agent's name, signing Steven Spielberg's name, signing you name its name on those letters, and thinking that that was the way to make it. And as soon as I found out that he was lying and forging, I dropped him like a hot potato, and so did the agent that I work with.
Good for you.
And I see him as a series regular right now, and I know how he got there, and I know the foundation that he's standing on is very shaky. And I just wonder how far it's going to go before it crumbles, because somebody who made up their whole career like that and made up credits like that, I just can't for the life of me think that he'll be able to sustain it.
No, I would agree with that. There'll be some event that will come upon him, and he won't have the confidence, he won't have the know-how to do it, and his house of cards are going to fall.
Exactly, and that's exactly what the way I feel about it. I don't look at that series he's on and go, oh, he used to be my client. I look at that series that he's on and I go, I am so glad I dropped him when I did, because my reputation would be at stake when his house of cards falls.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, when people lie on their resume, where every credit is made up when the person was an extra and they put on their guest star, that is wrong. They should not do that, because it's getting everybody in trouble. The person who represents you, whose name is on your resume, also gets frowned upon. For instance, Jeff Greenberg, I represented a very, very attractive man many years ago, 6 feet four, Cary Grant, total spitting image, and very talented. He had on his resume guest star for Frasier and Wings.
And Jeff Greenberg, of course, guessed that.
Neither of which he did.
Oh, God.
And I submitted him to Jeff Greenberg, and I made a phone call. And I said, well, being that he guest starred on these shows for you, I'd really like to suggest him for this series regularly.
See, I even feel bad for you now.
Oh, yeah. Jeff.
That's terrible.
Jeff barely has time to comb his hair, as you know. He took 20 minutes out of his busy day to chew me out, because this person, not only he'd never heard of him before, he was not on his shows either. And here I was going to bat for him like that, and I called the guy almost unable to speak. I was so upset. I said, how could you do that? He said, well, Jeff and I had a special agreement. And I said, what? What? He said, we had a special agreement. I said, what am I supposed to do with that information? And I called Jeff back, and I told him that. And I gave him the guy's phone number. I said, you two work it out. But just know this, Jeff, I'm not responsible for whatever this was that happened right now. I don't know how it ended up, but I'm very cautious and very conscious of a person making up stuff on the resume. If you have a featured extra part and you want to call it featured, that's one thing. But if you have an extra part and you call it guest star or co-star, then you're asking to get everybody in trouble. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I completely agree with what you're saying. I would say one thing. I would say that whatever you've done, there's nothing wrong with embellishing it, but not lying about it.
Right.
For example, if you were an extra and some extras were in a group and everybody was saying something, improvising something, you might be able to say then to a casting director that you had some lines.
Mm-hmm.
You're embellishing it. I mean, you did have some lines, but you were doing it, you were improvising. But what it says to the casting director is, oh, so this person was a bit more than just an extra.
Yeah.
You know.
That's fine, but for somebody to say guest star when that's all they did is I think it's lying.
Yeah, that's dangerous. It sounds good that this person, whoever you're talking about, is on a series now, but something will happen. I mean, I'm sure he feels as though, well, I did what I did and look where I am, but something will happen. He just won't have, in all likelihood, he won't have the legs to have a successful career.
Yeah, and I know that there are some people out there who, you know, and I'm not saying this about this person, but there are sociopaths who really can do a very convincing job of making things up and making people believe them. And you know, I just have to believe that, you know, what goes around comes around, and you make the bed that you end up laying in. And you know, I don't feel bitter about that situation. I just feel grateful that I found out in time not to be taken along with it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, because integrity is really all we have, don't you think?
Yeah, integrity and your ability to act.
Truly.
And be really good, because when you're really good, it's noticed.
Yes, definitely.
Whether it's in a showcase or in an audition.
And when you're a good person and you're comfortable in your own skin and you put everybody at ease when you walk in the room to meet those producers and that director, isn't it true, Michael, in your experience, that those people will pay big money to put you on the set because they know that you're going to be counted on, you're going to make
exactly.
everybody at
you
ease?
You know, It's as simple as if you just see a casting director and you feel comfortable about yourself, the casting director feels more comfortable about you, likes you more, and feels you're more able to do the part, to get the part, make the producer happy. It's so important to go in, whether you're faking it or not, to feel comfortable or to look like you feel comfortable and eventually grow into comfort.
Yeah, act like, you know, just the ability to act. I mean, if you're going to be an actor, you first have to act confident about that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So do you see yourself writing another book in the near future, Michael, or is this pretty much?
No, I really don't. I wrote this because, you know, with 20 years, and I just thought I could say some things that would, and I say this, I really mean this, I thought I could say some things that are going to be really helpful, and I put throughout this whole book all kinds of important, sound, reasoning type of things, and also some tricks and some just simple things that people forget to do, and how far it's going to take, how much further they're going to go if they just employ certain techniques. And I'm not talking about acting techniques because I don't know how to act.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things they can do. It's the business of acting. You know, it's not only being a good person, being a good actor, but it's maneuvering, you know, now it's sort of navigating the system.
Right, right.
And that's what I try to impart in this book.
Yes, and you did that very well. I mean, one of the things I learned as an actor, the reason I mentioned single mom is because when you're a single mom and you're an actor, you do not have the luxury of being afraid. You just have to put yourself out there, and you have to just walk in fearless, and you have to do what you need to do, and I worked all the time, fortunately. But I'm thinking that if you were to write another book, that it might have something to do with the ins and outs of talent managers.
Well, that's interesting. You know, what I do in that regard is, well, for example, at UCLA, I give a seminar for aspiring or beginning agents and managers. So I'll do it that way. I don't see myself writing another book. What I would like to see is if, and I've been approached already, is if this book was turned into a reality-based show.
Oh.
Where various couples, Dicks and Janes, so to speak, from
yes.
New York and Chicago and all over the country
right.
come to L.A. and we follow them in acting classes and showcases,
mm-hmm.
At Hollywood parties.
Mm-hmm. From Ohio and Indiana,
yeah,
Kentucky,
and,
Tennessee.
And we follow them. And, you know, in a way it's been done before, but it's how you execute it, and people feel as though if they base it upon this particular book, they'd have a better shot, and they love that title, if I do say so myself.
Oh, it's a great title, and the cover is very, very clever.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it reminds me of Jailhouse Rock.
That's right.
With Elvis Presley, it just does. It sort of makes me think that, and the colors are great.
Dick and Jane on the cover, they're just trying to break into Hollywood. They're trying to break through the bars in. They're trying to get into Hollywood, get into jail, get arrested.
I went to a party the other night for Deborah Manners, just opened a new agency.
Sure, I know
Deborah. And she said to tell you hello. You know Deborah? You know Deborah Manners, right?
Well, I was best friends with her brother, Scott Manners.
Well, then you do know her. She said to tell you hello.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah, no, I know Deborah when she was little.
Yeah. She's,
not that I'm that old, but
no,
I know
you're
when
not.
She was...
You look very, very young.
When she was little.
Uh-huh. Well, she's opened her own agency now.
Good for her. I said, good for her.
Yes. And she had a party the other night, and Gary Marsh was there.
Uh-huh.
So I told Gary said, well, when am I going to be on your radio show? And I said, pretty soon I'm going to have you on. I said, I'm having Michael Wallach on Tuesday. And he wrote the book on how to get arrested, and his face lit up, and he goes, yes, yes, and tell him I said hello. And I was wondering, I know that Breakdown Services has acting books and things like that for sale in their bookstore. Why wouldn't you have your book there for sale?
Oh, it is there.
Is it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, you didn't mention that.
Oh, no, I guess not. If you go to their store,
yeah,
and you'll see it's one of about six books he sells.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a perfect match to be there.
Yeah, I think so, too. And he's got it. He's one of the ones that has it early before it's officially released.
Right, right. Well, I just think anybody, whatever they can do to, and also I'm a big stickler for this, having a radio show called Spiritual Hollywood.
I'm finding it's a tremendous show.
Oh, yeah, and it's all about, you know, finding your true self and getting back to your true nature and what is it that really drives you to do the things you do, and what is your purpose, and what is your passion, and why is it that you want to do this? Do you want to be famous? Do you want to make a difference? Do you want to help people get in touch with their own emotions because you can so greatly access your own in front of the camera? I mean, it is like a ministry. It can be. And when you see your career as a way to offer help to others, like this young man at the car wash, had he been willing to help me with my dilemma and my thing I was panicking over, I would have remembered him much, much more kindly and fondly and perhaps helped him. But when you're an actor and you're using your talents and gifts to be of service to others by helping them access their feelings, and you're there in that casting office to as a solution to solve a problem so those people can go home and play with their kids, you're the one they're going to cast. You're not there to say, gimme, gimme, gimme. You're there to offer your gifts. And when you walk in with that mindset, it's a frequency that you carry. It's a vibration that you carry, and people can feel it. And that's the difference between the ones who feel comfortable in their own skin with a solid sense of self and those who are desperate, like the guy at the car wash.
Yeah, perfect example.
Exactly.
Perfect example.
So, you know, that's what Spiritual Hollywood is all about, is using Hollywood to raise consciousness by starting with the individual themselves, getting them in touch with who they are and why they want to do this thing. And go from there and put that out there in the world and put that out there in the industry.
It is amazingly important to
completely
feel comfortable with yourself, because it just, there, the dividends from that are amazing. The things that happens that you never even thought about. I mean, it's just like in relationships or anything else. When you feel good about yourself, you attract people.
Yes, it's a law of attraction.
And, you know, that's right. You know, like attracts like.
Absolutely. And I
believe in that also.
Because what you do is, you use the law of attraction in this book, whether you meant to or not. I saw it all over the place.
Well, I didn't really know I did.
You did. And it appealed to me very, very much. I've been using the law of attraction my whole life. I just didn't know what to call it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was born spiritually wide awake and having a very solid sense of self. And that's why I was able to not just survive, but to thrive and prevail over a great many things that would have, you know, crippled many people.
You're definitely, I've found you to be a strong person who feels good about herself.
Well, thank you, Michael. And
yeah, that's what I've always felt from little things I've heard and seen.
Well, thank you.
And that's you. And
thank you.
And everybody should only aspire to be like that.
Well, thank you. I agree with you. And every client that I represent is just that kind of person that the producers can't get enough of and the casting directors can't get enough of. They're just, I mean, I have 30 clients and they are working all the time, and
that's
I'm so
great.
Blessed and so thrilled to have each and every one of them. And I mean, they're in, on a professional level, they're like my family.
Huh.
On a professional level.
That's
and,
beautiful.
Yeah, and I enjoy mentoring and guiding and coaching more than anything else. And the fact that I get paid for this is icing on the cake.
Yeah, and you know, that's perfect example. That's very analogous to the actor who loves what they do and then gets a job,
mm-hmm.
a serious job or something, and they feel as though, I can't believe I'm getting paid for this.
Isn't it wonderful? And when we celebrate a success, we don't celebrate the success because it's unusual. We celebrate the success because success is natural.
Right.
And we celebrate how natural success is.
Mm.
And a lot of people celebrate success because, oh, my God, I can't believe this happened to me. Well, of course it's going to happen to you. That's what your job is to book jobs.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I
want to
thank you so much. We're coming up on the end of this Spiritual Hollywood Hour. As I mentioned, it would go by very quickly.
And it did.
And it did. So please call on me anytime, Michael, if you want anybody to come and be on a panel with you, co-chair something, create something of the reality show, whatever
you know,
it is.
I wish we spoke a little sooner, because I'm giving a seminar on September 15th, actually.
Well, anything that comes up and I pop in your mind, don't hesitate to call me. You have
absolutely. I think you'd be great.
Yeah, I'd be happy to come and assist at anything to help, you know, get the word out that, you know, you can completely control your destiny. You put one foot in front of the other. You take a deep breath, you stand up really straight, and you love yourself, and you get out there and do it, and you keep believing and having faith that you can start from right where you are, and you don't have to be anywhere else. You can start right from where you are and achieve
wherever
everything
you are.
You want.
You can make it from whatever position you're
absolutely,
in.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much again, Michael, for joining me.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I'm so glad. I'll get you a copy of the show. And everybody, www.howtogetarrested.com. Check out this book. Get a copy. You will be so glad you did. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next week. Good night, Michael.
Okay, night to you.